Section G, cyclic voltammetry. In this section, we shall discuss another kind of linear potential scan voltammetry, so-called cyclic voltammetry, which over the last 10 years has increased in popularity and application to a tremendous degree. Until today, it is one of the most widely used electroanalytical methods for the qualitative diagnosis of the general features of electrode processes. Cyclic voltammetry is simply an extension of linear potential scan voltammetry in which at the end of one scan of the potential, instead of returning the electrode potential at once to its initial value, the direction of the scan is reversed and the potential is moved in a linear fashion back in the direction from which it came. Thus, the potential time profile imposed on the electrode is triangular, as shown in figure G1. And the cyclic voltammogram that results is shown in figure G2. Of course, the first half of a cyclic voltammogram has the same properties and shape as the voltammograms we have just discussed in single sweep potential scan experiments. But now, after the first cathodic peak current is obtained and the direction of the potential scan is reversed, the lower portion of the curve in figure G2 is observed, in which an anodic peak current, labeled I PA, is obtained. It corresponds to the reoxidation of the reduced product that was formed at the electrode surface during the first portion of the triangular cycle of the potential. And even though we started out with a solution containing none of the reduced form of the reactant, an anodic peak current will still appear on the second half of the cycle, because the reduced product is formed right at the surface of the electrode, where it is available for oxidation during the anodic cycle. The primary characteristics of cyclic voltammograms that are monitored and used to elucidate the nature of the electrode process are the cathodic and anodic peak currents, labeled I PC and I PA in figure G2, and the two corresponding peak potentials. The separation expected between the anodic and cathodic peak potentials in cyclic voltammograms is given by equation G3 for reactants that adhere to the Nernst equation. At 25 degrees centigrade, the two peaks will be separated by 57 to 63 millivolts divided by the number of Faradays per mole involved in the electrode reaction. The exact separation value depends on how far beyond the first peak the forward scan is allowed to continue before the scan direction is reversed. Commonly, the scan reversal is chosen to occur a few hundred millivolts beyond the forward peak potential, and in this case, the predicted peak separation is 57 to 58 millivolts. Note that the separation in peak potentials does not depend on the rate at which the potential is scanned backwards and forwards, no matter where the scan reversal occurs. Both the absolute positions and the separation of the peaks should be immune to changes in the rate of potential scan for Nernstian systems. Equation G3 gives the expected difference between the peak potentials, and equation G4 gives the relation between their sum. This is a useful expression because it shows how cyclic voltammograms can be used to obtain good estimates of the standard potential for electrode reactions. So long as the scan reversal is made at potentials well beyond the peak potential of the forward scan, the simple average of the two peak potentials will be equal to the standard potential for the half reaction proceeding at the electrode, except for the term which corrects for any inequality in the diffusion coefficients of reactant and product. This correction usually amounts to no more than a few millivolts, so to a first approximation, the average of the two peak potentials is a good measure of the standard potential. Actually, the potential obtained in this way is a formal potential rather than a true standard potential because the measurements are being made in solutions containing excesses of supporting electrolyte, and extrapolations to infinite dilution of the electrolyte and reactant would be required to obtain true standard potentials. For this reason, the potentials obtained by cyclic voltammetry, or for that matter other electroanalytical techniques, are best regarded as formal potentials corresponding to the particular solution composition employed in each experiment. The properties of the anodic and cathodic peak potentials we have just described are to be expected so long as the system being studied obeys equation G3. That is, so long as the separation between the two peak potentials doesn't depend on the scan rate, thereby confirming its adherence to the Nernst equation under the experimental conditions employed for the recording of the cyclic voltammograms. If the system fails to meet this criterion, equation G4 will no longer be exact. However, the formal potential will still lie somewhere between the anodic and cathodic potentials, even in cases where the Nernst equation is not obeyed, and limits can therefore be set on the true formal potentials, even for situations where equation G3 isn't obeyed. Equation G5 expresses the very simple property that the anodic and cathodic peak currents are expected to display, namely that they should be equal when the electrode process is a simple one, involving nothing except the conversion of the oxidized to the reduced form of the reactant, and then vice versa. But note by looking again at figure G2 how these two peak currents are to be measured. The cathodic peak current, obtained on the first half of the cycle, is measured with respect to the background current, which would be observed if there were no reactant present. But the anodic peak current is measured from an extension of the flat portion of the current potential curve just preceding the anodic peak. The anodic peak current is not measured from the background level that would be obtained in the absence of a reactant, but from this higher level corresponding to the cathodic current that continues to flow even during the anodic going portion of the potential scan because of the continued diffusion of the initial reactant to the electrode surface. When the two peak currents are measured according to the diagram shown in figure G2, they should be equal to each other for electrode reactions which contain no complications. Now let's consider a few applications of the cyclic voltammetric method. Figure G6 shows an example in which more than one electroactive product is formed at the electrode surface during the initial potential scan. In G6, the initial direction of the potential scan is anodic rather than cathodic. The scan commences from potentials on the right-hand side of the figure, and the potential is scanned toward the left, towards more positive values. On the first scan, the single anodic peak labeled 1 was obtained. Then, when the direction of the scan was reversed, on the first scan toward more negative potentials, two peaks, labeled 2 and 3, are observed, rather than the single cathodic peak, which would be expected in the absence of complications. The presence of two reduction peaks suggests that two species may have been formed during the initial anodic scan, and this possibility is confirmed when the anodic scan is repeated a second time. The dashed curve in figure G6 resulted when the scan direction was reversed a second time, and this time two anodic peaks are present. Peak 5 appears at the same potential as did peak 1. It corresponds to the continued occurrence of the original anodic electrode reaction. But peak 4, the new anodic peak, appears at a potential near to that of cathodic peak 3, observed on the first cathodic going cycle. Describing these processes in words is somewhat involved, but if we go to a real chemical example, I think the kind of information that can be extracted by inspection of cyclic voltammograms, such as the one shown in G6, will become clear. The substance para-aminophenol can be oxidized at platinum or carbon electrodes according to the electrode reaction shown in G7. A two-electron oxidation of para-aminophenol occurs to give the quinone imine. This electrode reaction proceeds at the potential corresponding to peak 1 in figure G6. The quinone imine produced in reaction G7 undergoes hydrolysis in the presence of acid to yield benzoquinone and ammonium ions according to reaction G8. And the reduction of benzoquinone to hydroquinone proceeds at the electrode as shown in reaction G9. But this electrode reaction occurs at a different potential than does the reduction of the unhydrolyzed quinonamine back to the original para-aminophenol. So, following peak 1, we have in the vicinity of the electrode two electroactive species which can be reduced during the second half of the cycle, quinonamine as well as benzoquinone. The quinonamine is reduced at the potential corresponding to peak 2 of figure G6 while benzoquinone is reduced at the more negative potential corresponding to peak 3. So, that portion of the initial product of the anodic electrode reaction, the quinone-imine, which has not hydrolyzed, according to equation G8, produces peak 2 during the cathodic going cycle. And the hydrolyzed fraction produces peak 3. But these two cathodic processes produce two oxidizable species in the vicinity of the electrode. Hydroquinone is present for the first time along with the original reactant, para-aminophenol. And peak 4, which appears for the first time on the second anodic going cycle, is therefore due to the oxidation of the hydroquinone produced from the reduction of the benzoquinone, which was in turn produced from the hydrolysis of the initial electrode reaction product. In cases such as this one, additional experiments are usually conducted in order to confirm the interpretation. For example, cyclic voltammograms of a solution of hydroquinone, a stable species, give one anodic peak at the potential of peak 4 in figure G6 and one cathodic peak at the potential of peak 3. This additional experimental information strengthens the diagnosis that I have elaborated for the shapes and positions of the peaks in figure G6. You may wish to stop the tape at this point to pause and go over equations G7 through G9, comparing them with figure G6, to convince yourself that the analysis given here seems reasonable. Let's consider another example now, in which cyclic voltammetry is used to study a system where the initial product of the electrode reaction undergoes a chemical transformation to yield a second product that cannot be oxidized or reduced at the electrode. When the rate of this chemical transformation is great enough to produce appreciable conversion of the electrode reaction product during the time required to record the voltammogram, one obtains results as those shown in figure G10. The three sets of curves, A, B, and C, correspond to different potential scan rates. Curve A, with the highest peak current in both the anodic and cathodic directions, was recorded with the highest scan rate, and therefore the smallest amount of time was required for its recording. The anodic and cathodic peak currents are essentially equal in curve A, which means that the electrode reaction product, formed during the cathodic going cycle, persisted in the solution near the electrode and was reoxidized during the second half of the potential scan. The equality of the anodic and cathodic peak currents can be taken as an indication that the product of the electrode reaction is stable on the timescale required for the recording of the complete voltammogram. Curve B corresponds to the same system with a lower scan rate. More time is required to complete the scan for curve B than was true for A. The peak currents are both lower, but the cathodic peak current is now somewhat larger than the anodic peak current, implying that some of the product of the electrode reaction, which was produced during the cathodic scan, has been converted into a form which is electrochemically inactive during the anodic going scan. Finally, a still smaller scan rate is used to obtain curve C, and the anodic peak current becomes very much smaller than the cathodic peak current, implying that a large fraction of the initial product of the electrode reaction is no longer present for reoxidation by the time the potential has returned to values where the initial reaction product could be oxidized. Figure G11 summarizes the sort of cyclic volumetric behavior we have been describing. The figure shows the ratio of the anodic to the cathodic peak current plotted as a function of the potential scan rate. If the electrode reaction were a simple one, in which only interconversion of stable reduction and oxidation products were proceeding, the dashed line in figure G11 would be obtained. That is, the two peak currents would remain equal to each other at all scan rates. On the other hand, when the initial reaction product is consumed in a subsequent reaction, the peak current ratio decreases from unity as the scan rate is decreased because more time elapses during the recording of the cyclic voltammogram. Such deviations of the anodic to cathodic peak current ratio from the dashed horizontal line in figure G11 are diagnostic for the occurrence of what are sometimes called follow-up chemical reactions. A real system that displays this type of cyclic volumetric behavior is the trisethylenediamine complex of cobalt-3, whose chronopotentiometric behavior we described previously in section E. The electrode reaction, G12, involves the reduction of the cobalt-3 complex to the corresponding complex of cobalt-2. When this reaction is examined by cyclic voltammetry with rather high scan rates, an uncomplicated cyclic voltammogram is obtained with single peaks for both cathodic and anodic scans, and the two peak currents are equal. However, when the scan rate is decreased, the peak current on the anodic portion of the cycle falls below its cathodic counterpart, and this is because of the occurrence of reaction G13 subsequent to reaction G12. That is, the cobalt-2 complex, which is the initial product of the electrode reaction, loses one or more of its ethylenediamine ligands, depending on the pH of the solution, and since only the cobalt-2 complex containing three ethylenediamine ligands can be reoxidized at the electrode, the anodic peak current becomes smaller than the cathodic peak current by an amount that depends on the extent to which reaction G13 has proceeded. By quantitative measurements of the difference between the dashed and solid curves in figure G12, it is possible to evaluate the rate constant for the follow-up chemical reaction, G13, that is responsible for the difference between the curves. The method for proceeding from the experimental measurement of the peak current ratios to the rate constant is relatively complex, and I will not discuss it. However, it is discussed in the references which are included at the end of this section. One of the most useful applications of cyclic voltammetry is in the determination of standard or formal potentials for the half reactions of interest. We saw earlier in equation G4 that the standard or formal potential for a particular half reaction, which gives rise to a pair of anodic and cathodic peak currents, is often very nearly equal to the simple numerical average of the two peak potentials. Now, this application of cyclic voltammetry is particularly useful when the electrode reaction leads to unstable products, because the time scale for a cyclic volumetric experiment can be made very short by resorting to high scan rates, and in this way, standard potentials can be obtained for half reactions involving products which may be too unstable to allow their standard potentials to be measured in more traditional ways. As an example of such an application of cyclic voltammetry, we will consider first the determination of the formal potential for half reactions involving rather unstable anionic and cationic radicals, which can be generated from the electroreduction or oxidation of polyaromatic hydrocarbon molecules, porphyrins, or similar sorts of large organic molecules. Figure G14 shows a cyclic voltammogram for the tetraphenyl porphyrin molecule recorded in methylene chloride as solvent at a platinum electrode. You see there are two sets of anodic and cathodic peak currents occurring at very different potentials. The set on the right-hand side of the figure, at the negative potentials, corresponds to the one electron reduction of the porphyrin molecule to its anion radical. Similarly, at the far left-hand side of the figure, at the more positive potentials, the neutral porphyrin molecule is oxidized by one electron to produce its cation radical. Neither the anion nor the cation radical of tetraphenyl porphyrin is particularly stable, and it will be difficult to evaluate their formal potentials by conventional means. However, the peak current for these two half reactions are equal, and the peak potentials are independent of the scan rate, so a simple average of the two sets of anodic and cathodic peak potentials is a good measure of the formal potentials for these two half reactions. One of the study problems at the end of this section deals further with the determination of the two formal potentials from the peak potentials in figure G14. As a second example of this kind of application of cyclic voltammetry, we consider the determination of the standard potential for half reaction G15, involving the chloropenamine complexes of ruthenium-2 and ruthenium-3. The problem is to measure the standard potential for this half reaction before reaction G16 occurs. The chloropenamine complex of ruthenium-3 is stable in solution. but the chloropenamine-ruthenium-2 complex is unstable with respect to the aquation reaction, G16, in which the chloride ion attached to the ruthenium-2 is replaced by a water molecule. The occurrence of this reaction causes double peaks to appear in cyclic voltammograms recorded at modest sweep rates with solutions of the ruthenium-3 complex, as is shown in figure G17. The solid line in G17 is for the first cycle. The cathodic peak A corresponds to the uncomplicated reduction of the ruthenium-3 complex. But the important feature to note is that the subsequent anodic scan yields two anodic peaks, B and C. And if the potential scan is reversed a second time, a new cathodic peak appears, peak D, along with peak A, which now exhibits a lower peak current. This cyclic volumetric pattern is identical to the situation we talked about earlier for para-aminophenol, in which the initial product of the electrode reaction undergoes chemical decomposition to yield a second electroactive product. The pair of peaks, C and D, in figure G17, correspond to the cyclic voltammogram that is obtained with a separate solution of the stable product of reaction G16. That is, they correspond to the oxidation and reduction of the aquapenamine complexes of ruthenium 2 and 3, as shown in half reaction G19. The aqua and chloro complexes of ruthenium 2 have different formal potentials, and they therefore display cyclic volumetric peaks at different potentials. We can't take the average of the peak potentials for peaks A and B in figure G17 to evaluate the formal potential for the chloropenamine complex, because when the product of an electrode reaction undergoes a subsequent chemical decomposition, the average of the two peak potentials need not fall close to the formal potential. However, if the scan rate is increased sufficiently, a cyclic voltammogram with only a single anodic peak can be obtained, as is shown in figure G18. At these higher scan rates, the time scale of the experiment is decreased to the point where reaction G16 doesn't consume a significant amount of the chloropenamine-ruthenium-2 complex before it is reoxidized at the electrode during the anodic half of the cycle. Now, the average of the two peak potentials in figure G18 can be utilized, with equation G4, to obtain a reliable measure of the formal potential for the chloropenamine complexes of ruthenium-2 and 3. The method of obtaining formal potentials that we have been discussing is a general one, and it can be of considerable utility in all sorts of circumstances. The only requirement that must be met, and in some cases it can be a severe one, is that all of the peak potentials measured do not show a dependence on scan rate. For example, in figure G18, the peak potential of peak A must remain unchanged if the scan rate is increased further. Unless the peak potentials display this immunity to changes in scan rate, the electrode reaction may not be adhering to the Nernst equation at the high sweep rates that may be necessary in order to avoid follow-up chemical reactions. In that event, the cyclic volumetric method may no longer be used in the simple way we have described to evaluate formal potentials. However, it is worth noting, as I did in passing earlier, that even when peak potentials do vary with the potential scan rate, limits on the formal potentials can still be obtained. Thus, whenever a pair of cathodic and anodic peaks is observed for an electrode reaction, under conditions where the reactant and product undergo no follow-up chemical reactions, the formal potential must lie somewhere between the two peak potentials so that the true formal potential can be specified to lie within a reasonably narrow range of potentials. When peak potentials do begin to show dependence on scan rates, the measure dependence can, in fact, be used to evaluate the electron transfer rate constant for the particular electrode reaction involved. And this is the final example of the application of cyclic voltammetry that we will examine. Figure G20 gives an example of a pair of cyclic voltammograms in which the peak potentials do show a dependence on scan rate. In the curve with peaks A and A prime, the peak potentials are closer together and the peak currents are smaller, so the scan rate must have been smaller. At a higher scan rate, peaks B and B prime result. Note that the peak potentials for B and B prime have moved away from each other. The cathodic peak occurs at a more negative potential and the anodic peak at a more positive potential. This behavior of the peak potentials is diagnostic for electrode reactions which deviate from Nernstein behavior. This means that the transfer of the electron from the reactant to the electrode becomes rate limiting, and the ratio of the concentration of the oxidized to the reduced form of the reactant at the electrode surface is no longer given by the Nernst equation. When these sorts of deviations are observed, it becomes possible to use them to evaluate the rate constant for the electron transfer step. The way this is done is indicated in figure G21, in which the magnitude of the separation between peak potentials is plotted against a parameter which involves the electron transfer rate constant, K sub s, the square root of the scan rate, and the factor A, which is defined in equation G22 in terms of the other experimental parameters, which are either known or readily measurable. Note in figure G21 that if the electrode reaction obeyed the Nernst equation throughout the range of scan rates involved, there would be no dependence of the separation of the peak potentials on the scan rate. The difference between the peak potentials would fall on the dashed line in the figure. Thus, for a one electron reaction at 25 degrees centigrade, a separation of about 58 millivolts between the two peaks would be observed at all scan rates. At sufficiently low scan rates, this behavior is observed for many reactions, although the scan rates one may have to use to achieve constant peak potentials could be so low that the resulting peak currents are too small to measure. As the sweep rate increases and one moves to the left in figure G21, the amount by which the separation of peak potentials exceeds the dashed line can be used to evaluate K sub s by simply reading from the solid curve in figure G21. A familiar example of a system which shows this kind of behavior is the reduction of cadmium ion in a sulfate-supporting electrolyte at a mercury electrode. The electrode reaction is the one shown in equation G23. And in table G24, the observed differences between the cathodic and anodic peak potentials and their dependence on the scan rate are shown. As the scan rate is increased from 48 to 120 millivolts per second, the peak potential separations listed in the table were used in conjunction with figure G21 to evaluate the rate constant, Ks, listed in the last column of table G24. You can see that these experiments resulted in a reasonably constant value for the rate constant, which is also in good agreement with values obtained by other methods. So, for systems in which moderate changes in peak separation can be observed over experimentally accessible scan rates, cyclic voltammetry provides a convenient and fairly rapid method for evaluating the rate constant for the electron transfer reaction. The method is quite commonly used for this purpose because of its convenience, although some caution must be exercised because other factors, such as the ohmic resistance of the solution being studied, can also lead to scan rate dependent peak potential separations to which figure G21 would not apply.
Please turn to slide 7 for the continuation of this ACS audio course.